Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is Aaron O'Brien. Holly has been once again taken by both Red Angels. She is now getting double-teamed since Aaron got his turn last week in the outtakes that didn't come. And she's getting Eiffel Towered.
This is Holly's going to kill you. She's going to kill you.
I can't
you
wait.
You broke him.
Well, the Eiffel Tower is an old joke on her birthday last year, so she's going to love that. And we've got Philip Miller with us again.
Hello.
We had you on, was it episode 2 or 3?
Three.
So it's been a while.
Yeah, it was the Klingon episode.
Yeah, and Klingons are in this one. It's, Jen's going to hate
busy,
me.
And I felt so awful taking her place.
It's all kind of worked out because we had her on again, and it also was not a Klingon episode, and we're having...
And the Klingons are back in this one, and here I am.
Yeah. It's just how it worked out. Klingons were really underplayed. I mean, I really didn't see how they were going to figure in this season, honestly. I was kind of surprised that they were going to show up at all. And they did squeeze them in, so I was like, I guess that's good, I guess.
I think they worked them in decently well, I mean, for this season. I mean, they felt natural to me.
But they didn't work in Harry Mudd. Which I'm really, really bummed about, especially given how this episode ends. We may never see the indomitable Harry Mudd again.
Rainn Wilson, yeah.
Unless they make a whole series of short treks about him.
I would not be surprised if he shows up in Section 31. He seems like the kind of recurring character for
a clandestine
shenanigan show.
I want to see him 950 years in the future. That would be amazing if he just like ends up there.
Really old.
I would love that.
Be cruising by the fight as they jump to the future. He's got sucked in.
he would have had to have gone after we see him in TOS. Although it could have just been a robot of him in TOS. So maybe the real Harry might have got sucked into the future. I mean,
That
short track. The thing that upset me about that short track was that it turned on its head everything we know about Harry Mudd. We don't ever know if we saw the same Harry Mudd any of the times we saw him. It could have been a different Harry Mudd every single time. Although he seemed to remember Kirk, but. Maybe the robots share kind of a network. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be.
Who knows? Who knows?
Like I said, everything is up in the air.
Yeah, it's up in the air, but so we are talking about Star Trek Discovery, the final episode, Such Sweet Sorrow, Part 2.
And we'll talk about news at the end of the show this week, because all of the news kind of relies on the ending of this show. So might as well just leave the news to the end.
Yes, and this is Season 2, Episode 14, and it first aired April 18th, 2019. If you have not seen this final episode, I would say we're going to get into lots of spoilers.
Spoilers.
Don't go forward. Go back and watch the episode first. But
Go back in time?
Go back. Gotta go back.
Gotta go back to the future, Marty.
So we got the beginning of this episode. This is actually... Like we talked our last episode here, how I felt such sweet sorrow should have been, just a real in your face, you know, ship to ship battle. That's what I was super excited to see.
That fight kicked off. I'm like, oh, Aaron's gonna be pleased.
Oh, you know he's hard as a rock.
Aaron's jizzed in his pants after the first 5 minutes.
He creamed his jeans.
Oh, he's like, how I gotta pause it. I gotta get new jeans. He gets back 5 minutes later. Damn it. Need a new pair. Ample nacelles everywhere getting me.
Those ample nacelles. Yeah, so we start off with Discovery and Enterprise, and they have their shuttles and all the other armed crafts that they got ready for battle to fight Section 31. And we see... Michael Berman and Spock, they're all getting ready to jump into action. They're going to build the suit. Why haven't they built the suit by now?
Very good question. Why have they not built the suit now? They talked about it a lot last week.
What have these people been doing?
They've been writing off in the sport.
They've been writing home to their family all the time.
Yeah, I have a sneaking suspicion there's a little bit of a time jump, and they have been busy doing it while they were faffing about.
Going to the future.
They're all taking turns in the spore chamber, getting it ready for Leland. Yeah, jizz everywhere, so we can't stand up straight.
Yeah, I think both last week's and this week's, there's a lot, like, some of the timeline things that seem kind of weird are explained by it's all happening concurrently.
So they did an emotional episode and then an action episode? Is that what you're saying?
No, but, like, okay, so, like, even when you have, like, the emotional bits and then, like, in the scene prior to it, it's like, we have to do everything or it'll explode in 5 minutes. Like, I think we're supposed to take that as, like, these events are happening at the same time. They just can't physically show you that. So I'm thinking that, like, the hour runtime is actually, like, 30 minutes real time.
Although, Philip...
Probably.
Although we did get I believe in this episode and maybe all Star Trek, our first like split screen, or no, it wouldn't be split. It would be triptych.
It was comic booky.
Triptych of we got the two different characters. I don't think we've ever seen that in a Star Trek episode ever. Not to my knowledge.
I don't think so. It felt like Ang Lee's Hulk.
It felt like, sort of. I forgot about that. I was thinking about the Rick and Morty where they keep on splitting different times. Oh. And they're changing
realities.
I forgot which episode. Yeah, realities. Yeah. I forgot they kept like quadrupling it. And...
My thought for that actually goes to an anime no one's ever heard of that used that to do fight choreography in a really cool way.
I mean, it's very anime-esque too, but it made me think of Ang Lee's Hulk. I'm like, this looks like the Hulk movie when they're trying to make it look like a comic book. And that's one of the big props I do have for that Ang Lee, Eric Bana Hulk. I liked that they kept it kind of comic booky feeling, even though it was awful, you know.
The ending was awful for that Hulk movie. I think the rest of it had some nice aspects of Hulk's psychology, but other than that, the ending was kind of shitty. But
this is the Hulk. It's the Ang Lee Hulk podcast. Surprise!
Ed Norton's Hulk wasn't any much better. So
yeah, that's true. Although I like Ed Norton a lot.
Yeah, who doesn't like Ed Norton? I guess he's a dick, though. But that's
most people that work with him don't like him. But
Edward Norton.
Yeah,
he refused to admit that his role in Birdman was a play on how big of a douche he is. But from everything I've read, like, that is very much a commentary on how big of a douche he is to work with. For those that have seen Birdman,
Birdman's a good movie.
I guess I need to watch that now.
Well, let's get back to Discovery.
The time travel is just fucking us up, dude. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. We're all messed up in our head.
I'm thinking about Holly getting double teamed, but you know.
So.
You love you, Holly.
So anyways, they're going to, they're building this suit and getting that all set up. And at the same time, Section 31 ships are all there, and they, I believe there's 30 ships all together, and we get Leland calls them up, and basically Giorgio says, hey, everyone hates you now. And then we get this thing where he's basically saying, I'll take your ship, I'll use it for scrap, and I'll still get the sphere data from you. And then he says, in case you haven't noticed, there's 200 ships compared to your 30. And he goes,
count again.
Count again. And then he gets his ships all, like, flake off into a zillion different drones.
I was expecting them to just hammer the ships, like in Star Trek Beyond, and then he would win. But he didn't go that route for some reason.
Just before we get into it, Saru quotes
Sun Tzu.
Sun Tzu says, be extremely subtle, even to the point of formlessness. Be extremely mysterious, even to the point of soundlessness. I thought it was kind of cool. I didn't expect that from Saru.
Neither did Michelle Yeoh. Are you the same person?
Yes, I'm Michelle Yeoh.
Oh, man, we've had Michelle Yeoh on our show all along, guys. Surprise!
I just talk with an incredibly unsexy voice.
you can't let your stardom out now. I mean,
I'm getting into the character acting of playing a stupid American.
who likes Star Trek a little bit. It's character acting.
Yeah. I like when the ships fly. So we get the ships all, they all break apart. And so now we have more ships and... it's a bit of a visual diarrhea at that point. Don't you agree? There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's too much going on. And most of that, it's just, there's too many things. I mean, it was almost, I'm like 200. How there's that many shuttlecrafts between the two ships?
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of shuttlecrafts in there.
And there's yet another shuttlecraft for PO to steal, because shuttlecrafts are infinite and easily stealable. And
maybe
one
they
for
just
Spock
print
to
them, like 3D print them.
They're just being 3D printed in the back of the shuttle bay. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, that's why they couldn't build the suit until now. They're 3D printing all the shuttlecrafts.
Yeah, because PO had the thing all jammed up with her shuttle she was building.
Her ice cream she couldn't get right.
Talking about Poe, she, like you said, she did steal a shuttle, and she calls Pike and says that the Section 31 drones have refracting lattice shield design. So basically, they cannot be taken out one to one. They have to be taken out by two ships.
They gotta get double teamed. Wait,
there you go, Dave.
I keep saying this; it keeps coming back. Team.
We know what your Pornhub history looks like. Now. So anyways, so Poe's kind of out there, and Pike kind of just like, whatever, I guess Queen Poe is not going to listen to me whatsoever, so just keep fighting, whatever. Yeah, so the ships, Enterprise is fully engaged, Discovery is engaged in fighting all these ships and fighting the Section 31 ships. Oh, and by the way, the only Section 31 ship that has any life forms is Leland. Everyone else is dead, so we're assuming they shot them all out the airlock, all those Section 31 officers. So, and during that time, they are building the suit, and I guess Jet Reno, we see her charging the time crystal, and she needs more time because it's still being charged.
So did you notice that Jet Reno has kind of become the Nega Scotty?
Yeah.
In that, because like Scotty's like, you know, get it done in 4 hours, and then does the whole miracle worker thing. LaForge is like, get it done in 3 hours, and he just does it. And Jet Reno's like, get it done in 5 minutes. And she's like, fuck you. I physically can't.
Yeah, she was like, I can't
fuck
change.
I cannot change the laws of physics. Well, I mean, I thought they were making
that that's a Scotty line.
I feel like even the first episode they made her a mega Scotty, because not only is she's a crazy engineer, she's a crazy engineer. Just like, oh yeah, people's bodies, they're just engine, or they're just like machines, and she's got like hooked them up to gears and levers, trying to keep them alive. They've made her into a mega Scotty, so it's going to be interesting to see how she's going to fit in.
I kind of wish she was an amalgamation of Scotty and McCoy.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, yeah.
She's got all the
anti-Scott.
The anti-Scott.
Yeah.
Like the anti-Christ, but anti-Scott.
She's good. She's great. But the thing is, it's going to be relic syndrome all over again, because...
one day she'll be just an old woman and be like, I remember when I touched the time crystal. I saw this moment. You're an asshole.
I remember I cut myself in a transporter loop and I ate Franklin. Poor Franklin. Franklins always get eaten up in transporter loops.
Good old Franklin.
Fruit loops.
Also, a testament to Doug Jones's ability to act through anything.
I know.
Like, you can see the fuck you say after she says, tells him to get off her ass.
Get off my ass, sir, sir, sir.
Read
sir,
it on sir. His face.
Yeah. I know, that's pretty good. Great. Basically, the battle is just raging on. Pike basically says that Leland's controlling all the drones from the lead ship, so they just have to kind of target that. And that's what they're going for.
Do the episode one.
And at that same time, we get the suits basically ready to go. The time crystal is all charged. And they're rushing down to the shuttle bay. And Dave, you got one of your famous turbo lift shafts shots again with everything falling apart.
They're awful. But I mean, I'm guessing because of the way this one was shot, they're only showing the tracks of the turbo lift shaft and worker bee somehow flying in between them, which that doesn't make any sense, but I guess they're just zeroing out all of the ship until you need to see part of the inside of the ship.
And actually, if you notice, it looks like that space between the turbo lifts is actually like functional space.
Yeah.
Because you follow the explosion down to the debris that blows out the window that stabs Stamets.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
yeah, but the thing is, like, season one did it better, because when they flew through parts of the ship, you could see parts of the ship. Like, see the tunnels and the junctions and the Jeffries tubes and whatever it was flying through, like vents or whatever. And now they're just, like, zeroing out everything except for the turbo lifts, which is really annoying. Because, I don't know, I don't think... It's a minor thing at this point. We know they're just kind of fucking around with the CG because they're having fun with it. And it doesn't
they have
really,
a budget for the first time ever.
They have a budget, and they're not using it in the wisest places.
It would be great if that when they showed all that they played Roller Coaster of Love by the Ohio Players during that time. Roller Coaster.
Because I mean that's because the way they're showing them aren't really how they should work. They should just be a series of tubes. They shouldn't look like roller coasters.
They do
look like roller coasters, but should just be a series of tubes.
It's a silly effect. I don't really get what that was about, but
it's immersion breaking. I mean, I think they're trying to look cool. I think they're trying to get to the hip young audiences who've never seen Star Trek before, which is really strange when it's behind a paywall where only Star Trek people would pay for it. So,
I mean, you're kind of discounting the younger audience that got brought in by the Abrams verse. So, you know, say what you will about those movies. Like, I saw firsthand a bunch of friends of mine that I used to work with who would never give Star Trek the time of day went with me and like my manager to go see the 2009 Abrams and following that got into Star Trek. So like I do believe that
is a case. Those people might have gone over to CBS All Access. I just don't see, you know, new people coming.
But considering how much of a failure Star Trek Beyond was considered to be financially anyway.
I mean, nowadays if it doesn't make literally all the money, it's a failure. Like saying it's a failure counts as goddamn nothing.
but I mean it's part of the reason why Star Trek 4 is on hold, why they're not going to pay Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth because they don't have enough money because the last one didn't make as much money as I thought it was going to. I have no issue with the JJ movies in theory. I think the alternate timeline is a great idea. And
we should probably get back to the episode, though.
Well, no, but I mean, I just wanted to do a general statement. I don't hate them. Beyond was my favorite of them. The other ones had plot issues, but I mean, just like with Discovery, like I don't hate Discovery, but if it's got a bad plot issue, I will complain about a bad plot and plot holes. So,
yeah. So just one last thing: Beyond made twice its budget, roughly.
It's
not by any means a failure.
But I know,
to a studio it is.
Yeah, but to Philip, I mean, like to that point, you know, like the Aquaman movie went like fucking bananas, and like I'm a big, longtime reader of the Aquaman comics. I mean, that was a fun movie for me to see because I like to see the iteration of Aquaman, but it was not a good movie. It was a fun movie to see visually, but that's about it. It was kind of brain dead. It's just like one of those things that you just like people. I don't even understand what people go see movies for anymore. You know, I don't know, play with their titties while they're watching something on screen. I don't get it. You know, it's weird to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know Beyond did pretty good in the box office. I mean, it made double. But I mean, I just know the studio considered it a failure, which is why they're having such a hard time with four.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. They can't just. Well, let's not get into
it. I mean, that's awesome that it's bringing in new fans. I didn't think it was bringing in enough. I didn't think they were making enough money and getting enough new fans to translate to CBS All Access, which is interesting. Yeah, I'm glad it is bringing some people over, but.
But is CBS All Access by itself bringing in new fans? That's the real question. So anyway, so we left off with the turbo shafts, and I don't know how we got into all that.
Magic.
So, yeah, and so we got an explosion, like Philip mentioned, and we have Stamets gets severely injured. And so he gets taken off to sickbay to Dr. Pollard's, and who would he find there is that Dr. Colbert never really left. He stayed aboard.
You were my home all along, even when I was spurning and telling you to fuck you and go away.
Fuck you. I don't want you. Well, maybe I want you.
That squid guy's penis is too weird. I can't do it.
I can't do the squid guy anymore. I'm sorry. Got a terrible infection. In the shuttle bay, they're all set with a suit. And Spock basically says that he's going to fly the shuttle behind her and kind of be her eyes and ears and run the comm while she flies to a safe distance to open the wormhole.
I love how she kneels like the Star Trek in the darkness scene.
Yeah.
No, she does the superhero kneel to take off at any point.
And then when they open the shields to let them out, and they all go flying out, and Pike orders a cocoon around Burnham, so all the shuttles just start collecting around her. So anyway, so that's the plan. So they're moving forward into the battle, and we see this. I guess it's a pretty good effect, actually, seeing all those ships flying through space during the battle. And, you know, we see shuttles getting blown up and taken out by these drones, Section 31 drones.
That was a beautiful shot. I loved how she kind of glazes that, over the hull of the Enterprise. Oh, it was beautiful.
Yeah, that was some beautiful space carnage.
Right. Yeah, no, it was pretty cool. And during that time, the shields on the Section 31 ships are really hammering Discovery shields. They're lowering their shields more and more.
I think like 10 or 15 minutes in, it's like they're down to 30% shields, and they're still getting fired at like an. Like
remember, there's 30 ships and thousands of drones. I don't know what the drones can do to the shields, but maybe it's the depth of 1,000 paper cuts, like we saw Star Trek Beyond. So,
yeah, I'm not complaining that the shields have gone that low so fast. I'm just saying that it's just funny that they're 30%
now. Why doesn't
now.
The sphere data protect itself?
Yeah, exactly. Like last episode. So ships with shields aren't invulnerable, huh? So, that's interesting.
I have thoughts on that, but we'll not derail this any further.
So, because technically this is a pretty straight shot with this episode. There's not much to tell us.
Yeah,
so they're flying out there into space, like you said, a great shot of them. And Leland at some point beams over, just like
whenever they lower the shields to let Michael and Spock out.
Just like Michael Berman saw in her vision, you know, Leland does come aboard Discovery.
But he only wounds OO in the arm and everyone else is fine.
Yeah,
just as I suspected.
Yeah, this is where Giorgio and Nan basically go to work to fight.
Love the Giorgio Nan team up, and they start doing sex jokes and stuff to each other. I'm like, where was this earlier?
Yeah, Nan's clearly got a sadistic streak. She was getting really into that.
She was getting into that, making sex jokes and great stuff about sausages and all this stuff like that. And then going, so I guess she doesn't like sausage. I don't know. I was just like, huh, this is interesting. Where was this earlier?
And at this point, one of the Section 31 ships fires a torpedo at the Enterprise, and it gets lodged in the saucer sections like we saw in the vision of the future.
Send the therapist to get it out.
I love it.
She'll talk its feelings and it'll back itself out, right?
You're right. I don't really want to kill everybody. Just one person, my mother.
Am I still a torpedo?
Yes, am I?
Well, just whenever... It was like whenever Colbert went to go see her, I was like, am I still gay? And I was just, am I still a torpedo?
Am I still a torpedo?
Yeah, that's great. Anyway, it's funny. I would be great if she had a conversation with a torpedo. I would pay money for that. Anyway, so they're going to basically, they figure out that if this blows up, it'd take half the ship, if not just, you know, completely obliterate it.
How about we send in one of the R2-D2s to just flip the switch and shut the door?
Actually, that was the first time we saw that, too.
Stupid R2-D2s. They look like Gizmo Duck.
They did. They like that little robot in WALL-E, Evie.
Yeah. Or like a high-tech.
They were kind of busy keeping the rest of the ship in vaguely one piece.
Nah, just send one of them. You only need one to flip the switch. If you've got robots that are that advanced, just get one with a lever arm that can just pull the switch.
Well, Cornwall,
we don't know what their like programming is.
Oh. Yes. Well, Cornwell and Number One go to disarm the torpedo, and they're not going to do too well. And during that
send
time, we
in
also
the therapist.
Send the therapist. So, and then we have Nan and Giorgio. They're fighting. They're fighting Leland through the whole ship. We have the whole hallway that they spin around. That the gravity's affected.
Always here for a rotating hallway fight.
Yeah,
and those are never not fun.
They are fun, but I think it went a little too long on that because you would think that everyone else would be affected by that.
No, only one hallway lost gravity. It's just the one hallway.
Confusing, too. But anyways, Klingon ships decloak, and we have the Klingon giants, the cleaver vessel?
The cleaver ship.
Yeah, come in and blow up a couple Section 31 ships.
I just don't know why it just didn't fly around the entire battlefield, just cutting them all down after that one point.
And then
I have the feeling it's really big and slow and clunky, and its one trick is, surprise, I dropped out of cloak and cut you in half.
Yeah. It's sort of like the Daedalus on the SDF-1 smashing through the ships. It does that once, and how could you do it again?
But, man, I love the interior of the bridge of that ship. It looks very Klingon, motion so picture. Good. It looked great. The Klingons, you know, on the bridge looked great. They looked like Klingons that we know and love.
Yes.
And then Liz Lorel.
Sweet a bit.
Yeah, Chancellor Lorel was there with Tyler. And then we have the D7s, Dave, in action. So yeah, that was cool.
It was great. And I love how none of her people were like, I thought you died, Tyler.
I would wager that the only people that are actually aware are her bridge crew, and they're the Chancellor's direct underlings. They probably fucking know better than to say anything.
Yes. And then we get a bunch of spiders break off from the ship. And who do we got on there? Saru's sister, Serana. She became an X-Wing pilot in between time.
She became Porkins.
Porkins.
No one ever really dies. No one's ever really gone.
I was kind of surprised that you become a farmer that quick into a Kelpian seaweed farmer.
Well, I just don't understand how the Ba'ul haven't wiped them out with their other technology. They never, answered that. It's just we killed their all-in-one death ray, but that doesn't mean they've got other means of destroying a cattle-like race.
I think the impression we're supposed to get is they actually sat down and talked.
And they took their weapons.
If we saw the Ba'ul with them, that would have been interesting, but we only saw Serana, so we don't know if any of them were Ba'ul or not.
Well, and then from there, we have so the Klingons are in the fight. Obviously, the Kelpians are there too, so that's fun for everybody. And we have that Spock figures out that the reason we didn't get into this, but Michael finally gets a safe distance, and she can't seem to go into the future. She can't activate the wormhole technology. And Spock's like, it must have to do with that you have to still go back in time and set all those red signals.
But wait, I thought this was supposed to be a one-hit wonder. It's a one-way trip. How are you making five of the other trips before your one-way trip?
I don't understand that either. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Because it takes a while for the crystal to build up the energy and explode.
Yeah. I guess. Maybe...
If you made all those jumps, you only have to jump to the future, then just jump back. I don't know.
I mean, and also it takes less gas to drive 5 miles than drive to the next state.
Maybe that's true.
That'll throw you through time. Doesn't matter how far you're going through time. It's just opening the doorway is what should fucking drain it.
The singularity is also way smaller when she does the little private jumps.
Oh, so the big one when she pulls Discovery through is going to be more?
Yeah. If you just look at, the actual scale of all the shit she's doing, the little, small ones are slightly larger than she is, but then you get the giant vortex when she actually, at the end of the episode.
Right.
Yeah, maybe.
It does make sort of sense, although I don't know how the suit would know how to say that she can't jump to the future until she does all those other things. That doesn't make sense to me, but...
The universe is saying no, just like the universe is playing tug of war with her mother.
Don't think about it. It's fucking time travel. Time travel is stupid, and it never makes any sense. No matter what, the best thing you can do is not think about it.
Sorry.
But that's the problem. We think about things on the show.
We do think about things.
Yes, exactly. That is the problem.
That is a problem. Turn your brains off.
No.
Not entirely. It's just time travel. I learned long, long ago when time travel comes into play, just shut it off. Just turn it off.
And then and
Chrono Trigger taught me that.
Chrono Trigger was great.
It's an amazing game.
So Spock tells Burnham that she needs to take a leap of faith. It's only logical. So she has to go back in time to all the spots that they saw those seven signals. And that would be – she's going to do the signals, and that will be the way that she can move forward from there. Then we jump back on the Discovery.
Then she gets hit by a torpedo and lives.
Yeah, well, she didn't get hit, but got that
– Yeah, she did.
That decking or whatever.
She got hit by a shuttlecraft earlier, and then she gets hit by a torpedo. She is like invulnerable. Apparently, the suit makes you invulnerable too.
Sturdy ass suit.
And then aboard Discovery, we got Leland's fighting, obviously, to get the sphere data. And, you know, Giorgio and Nan are still fighting them. And they're...
Nan takes a nap, though.
Yeah, she kind of gets taken out sooner or later. And I don't know if those nanobots give you any extra human strength other than just being able to take phaser, you know, hits. But Giorgio is really taking a wallop. I don't know if those, you know, getting punched by Leland's worse than getting punched by a normal person. Probably, but
because he's like breaking through the glass on that
yeah, and container. He no longer has like pain receptors limit the biological matter,
right?
And since he can just rebuild any tissue, like if he tears a muscle punching somebody in the face, like whatever. Though I do gotta give a shout out to Michelle Yeoh's sassy fight commentary when Leland's like, "Where's my sphere date?" and she just shouts, "Hell!"
Yeah,
hell,
hell,
hell, nah,
hell.
A lot of sass this episode, sass all over the place.
Yeah, and then like I said, we jumped to the sick bay, and that's where we got the Culber moment with Stamets, where he's like, you know. Stamets is his home, so, and he doesn't want to, they're not breaking up, I guess, and they're going to the future together, so now they're stuck together until
they find somehow in the future being gay will be wrong again, and then they'll be in trouble.
Oh Jesus.
Wouldn't that be the thing in the future?
Yeah, they're going after the gay people. So so Burnham calculates all her jumps, and she starts jumping into the future. The wormhole opens, and she goes through. And we get a sort of like the moment at Interstellar when he's going in through the black hole, like all the stuff's flying at him. So we get the same thing happening to Burnham for that moment.
Which did you notice the really cool effect of when she, like, they did a really cool trick to, like, show she's entering the fourth dimension of... like everything we have seen as like a three-dimensional image, mm-hmm. when she goes through the vortex, flattens into a two-dimensional image, it rotates.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird too, because it makes it look like just like a drop in like a wall or wherever she's coming through. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It was a cool effect, although the initial one where she goes through the first time did feel a little bit long and drawn out.
Yeah.
Because it took me there was so much white light flying around, it took me a minute to realize she was screaming or making a screaming face, because I couldn't even see her face through all the light. Yeah.
And so we see her, she goes back to the asteroid or the Hiawatha, and then she sees herself when she's injured.
She's all smiling, looking at herself all hurt. And she's like, "Oh, I remember that. That hurt. That was awesome."
Man. And then she goes to Terra Elysium, where she puts the Red Burst there, and Discovery is going to save them from the nuclear disaster there.
So did Michael move them from the past, or did her mother move them?
Her mother did. Her mother, when she's explaining how she started like futzing around with time travel, she mentions that like she brought those people to the future after Control should have killed everything. And it's like, I knew I could tweak things. Oh, and that's when she like put all like the physical movement things, like the people being brought to Terra Elysium, moving where the sphere was, that was all her mother. Whereas all the signals were Michael.
Michael was just at the signals. Gotcha.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Because her mother's like, "The fuck you talking about?" when they ask about the signals.
Yeah, but I just they never also differentiated between what the signals are and going back, because we always assume that the signal is just the Red Angel showing up. So how did, is there a stealth mode where the signals don't ever come? It's kind of strange.
I assume they were just a big red fart she lets out.
Yeah.
You know, that's all it was. I obviously she made herself being known somehow with those red signals. It's just, I don't think you need to.
But then then Pike also saw them show up simultaneously. Spock saw them show up simultaneously too. So
time travel.
Time travel.
So it wasn't just the mom that came back to young Spock. Michael had to have come back. One of the signals had to have been Michael coming back to Spock in the past, showing him the red signals.
So I don't. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that one.
The signals doesn't mean the signals.
Spock knew about them.
It's weird because they they show the signals disappear, but they should have, to make it make sense, the signals should have just stayed there, like just like out in space for a while.
Yeah, I mean, because they also come with it, it's like, we detected these things. They are a thing that has happened. But then in, like, when they first go to find Reno, like, they're like, this is the first one that actually, like, showed us where the fuck it was. Right. So I'm kind of wondering if it's a all good things kind of weird timey-wimey.
So basically, yeah, she had to go back in time twice. Thanks. She had to go back in time to all the places to show all the signals and then do the rehash for to get Discovery to keep following them.
Unless those signals have some kind of time, like backwards through time thing, I can't figure it out either, but...
Like they mentioned that it's got like that gamma radiation, which is related to time travel. So it makes sense that like it just futzes around with the fourth dimension. Like you can, even though it hasn't happened yet, you can detect that it's a thing in advance.
And maybe those red bursts blow up and they disperse so much through space. They can't detect exactly where they are located.
Yeah. Until they actually happen. Which is when Michael jumps back.
Well, anyways, so, I mean, that's kind of a small technicality on other big technicalities that could be an issue.
Yeah, that way lies madness.
Yes. Yes. So, we have the counselor, Cornwell, and number one working on the torpedo, and it looks like it's still functional. It's going to blow up. They can't close the blast doors, and, so she basically says they can't shut it down, and they have all these different possible workarounds, but it doesn't look like anything's going to happen. And Pike,
send in the captain.
Pike decides, number one, you come up here, take the bridge, and I'll come down and check it out because you guys are fucking it all up.
Send in the Captain Gizmo Duck robot to shut the lever.
So anyway, so we have more of the Klingons fighting, and she
chance to die.
Chancellor Lorel is having a great time.
Screamed like a schoolgirl when they said that.
Yes, and in
straight up, no shame.
And then we jump to Burnham going to Borath and Zia, and she's doing the bursts. And so now she says she can go back to the current time, and she is now going to go 950 years into the future. And she tells Discovery to get ready because we're going to make that jump. And
I guess they're bringing the entire crew and not just a couple of people that volunteered.
I don't know. It's a hard one because I know some people did stay behind. So, but there's a lot of people that are there.
And Culver mentions like he came back. So presumably Discovery is not at full contingent. I mean, or it could be. Everyone could just said fuck it. But the impression I got from like the last couple episodes and this one is the people that did not want to go to the future stayed over on the Enterprise.
I mean, they weren't super clear either way because they just showed like the six people volunteering to come to the future with her, and now it seems like the entire ship because, I mean, there's a ton of people in Med Bay. I mean, the doctor was like, we can't deal with all the people. And so it did seem, and the Discovery's got
a ship, needs a lot of people.
The Discovery's got a relatively small crew complement, but anyway, I think it's got like 150 people tops, I think. So it's
so weird.
It's a relatively
such a
small
big ship, too. Yeah.
Well, it's got empty space in it.
So even if, like,
for worker bees to fly around,
50 people stay. And then there's also like a bunch of the people who took out like the shuttles and flyers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
There's a whole bunch of crew who aren't going to the future, who aren't on the ship.
True.
So there's 200 ships. So let's say 100 from each, the Enterprise and the Discovery. So there's only 50 people on board. You're probably right, about 50.
Yeah, and that med bay is super small, so it's not like, 10 people injured fills it up.
Yeah, they only build the med bay big enough for two, if you know what I mean.
Two for tea. So now Pike and Cornwell are working on the torpedo, and they have 90 seconds left. And Cornwell basically volunteers. She says, hey, I can do the emergency lever for the blast door. And, basically...
I know you've got a melty face future coming up. I don't want you to miss it.
How does she know that? Did he talk to her?
I don't know.
Anyway,
everyone's just psychic about Pike.
So like Pike was basically says, well, I'm going to die in the future. I'm going to get all fucked up in the future. Why don't I kill myself here?
Yeah, why not? Like she's like, I know you're going to be Pizza Hut one day. It'll be great.
but that Pizza the Hut face is really going to help other people. You're going to save other people. He's like, oh.
You're going
to
save Vina by going back to the cage.
I guess you're right. And he, this is a part I really kind of like, what?
I hated this part so much.
So Pike closes the door and there's a window on the door.
The window's one third of the door.
And she
watches her get vaporized.
Vaporized. How does that door not get vaporized when half the ship
door?
Did you see what the Enterprise looked in afterwards?
And all the other blast doors were
really
closed.
Sturdy door. It's a blast door.
Someone took a bite out of a donut. Like Homer took
a bite out of a donut.
I mean, it was not like a small explosion. It took half a good quarter of that disc section. So
Starfleet doesn't skimp on their blast shields. I mean, what can I say?
I guess.
I don't know.
Maybe there's a force field there. I don't know, but.
Transparent aluminum.
Yeah, which apparently Leland can smash through.
Leland can smash through, but a torpedo? Nah.
He cracks it, but he doesn't get through it.
Given enough time,
he would have gotten through it.
It would have taken him a while, because like, it spiderwebbed instantly, and then it was doing fucking nothing.
I think they just accidentally spiderwebbed it too soon.
So,
yeah, absolutely. Like, it should not have spiderwebbed first hit, but meh, whatever. I watch Kung Fu movies. I can't judge too harsh.
So anyways, Burnham Saru tells Burnham that their time's running out. She's got to make that jump now. And Spock and Burnham have a last parting moment, you know, saying goodbye to each other. And, you know,
by the most pompous assed Captain you can, and don't let go of him.
Yeah.
Obvious foreshadowing was obvious and kind of fun.
Find a doctor who's a major dick, also don't let go of him. Cling
Work
to both
him,
of them.
There'll be a huge pain in their
Jack
ass.
Jack them both off at the same time if you have to. Just don't let them out of your sight.
Which I do got to say, earlier episodes proves that Spock's self-control is like on par with the Buddha. Because it's like, oh yeah, no, calling him a freak and a half-breed is really, really bad to him. And then McCoy's like, you're green blooded half-breed every 2 damn seconds.
I know, he was such an asshole.
Well, that's why you can't stand Nurse Chapel. He's like, Michael didn't say anything about being nice to women. Just find two pompous assholes and just tolerate them.
Well, so Burnham basically says that she'll send the first signal when she opens the wormhole, and then she'll send a signal later on to let Spock know that they're okay, and they made it. So that's the idea there. So to finish up the rest of the red burst that they see.
I thought it was a one-way trip. How are you sending another signal?
And then we get the whole scene with Giorgio and Leland fighting, and they go down to engineering. And
the signal doesn't require actually being there.
And they bring her into the spore drive section where Stamets
interfaces. They fought through every other set. This is the last set they haven't fought through.
And yeah, right. Well, they didn't fight through Six Bay yet, so.
Oh, yeah. There's too many people in Six Bay to fight through that.
That'd be kind of funny, actually. It'd be kind of like a police.
Just like make it like an old kung fu movie. Just go through the wall.
It tears like paper too. It'd be
That would have been great.
So she traps him into the spore drive room where Stamets interfaces with the spore drive, and then she magnetizes the floor, and we get Leland kind of fall apart, and all the nano creatures come out of him. So pretty cool, a cool effect.
You don't have to go to the future anymore.
Holy shit, was that satisfying?
Yeah, it was nice.
Just watching him dissolve.
Yes. Yes,
it would have been nice if real Leland got any word in at the end. Because, I mean, like, the last thing he said is, you're not going to get me, and then he got gotten. It'd been nice if there was some real Leland in there somewhere still. Because I didn't hate Leland. I was just kind of getting tired of how they were treating Section 31. Not so much that the character bothered me.
Why is everybody always picking on me? So
Sucker punch me, Michael. I deserve it.
So Michael opens the wormhole. And we have this stunning scene where Discovery flies into the wormhole, and we have everyone else who's staying outside watching them, you know, Poe and Pike and Spock and everyone else. So, and then we jump forward.
You can do it!
To San Francisco, and where Starfleet headquarters is, and we have
I like that the Golden Gate Bridge was a solar farm.
Was it? I missed that.
When they fly over it, it's just nothing but solar panels.
Interesting.
Which is like a really cool way to like think of the future of, well, we don't need roads anymore, but it's a historical monument, so we don't want to like smash it, so fuck it, it makes energy now.
Roads where we're going, we don't need roads.
That is a good idea.
And we have a whole debriefing, and it's basically, like I said before, this is like the Indiana Jones end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. We all knew
this was coming.
We will not talk about Discovery. We will not talk about the Spore Drive. We will not talk about Section 31.
We will not mention any of the names of the crew.
Nothing will ever be talked about this before. And
let's just pretend this series doesn't exist. Here, this is how we're going to do it.
Yes, and then we get that whole scene, and it's interesting too when they ask what number one her name is. She says number one.
So my first name is number, and my last name is one.
It's hilarious. And then number one, and then that would be funny if that was her name.
It might actually be her name.
It'd be hilarious. And then we get a personal log from Spock, and he's kind of just going through his emotions and thoughts of what has transpired. And
I'm really sad.
I'm sad. Michael's gone. And then we see him putting on the uniform, and Dave...
Finally
shaves his goddamn beard and puts on the blue uniform, for God's sake.
Freaking out. Although he looks more like Spock to me with the beard than without the beard.
Ethan Peck, that was where they lost me.
Oh, hey, Ethan Peck does not look like Spock.
Did you notice his sideburns were
wrong? Oh, he was missing
the all of their sideburns were wrong. No one had the Starfleet regulation sideburns.
I know. Yeah. It is kind of like, come on, guys. Did you watch any of those old episodes? They lost
me. That was just a really weird thing I noticed, and I'm like, hold on a damn second.
Actually, Phil,
those are wrong.
You're not the first person to mention that.
Really?
Yeah.
I not heard anyone bring it up before.
Twitter. Some people have brought that up too.
Oh yeah.
It's just bizarre.
I avoid the Twitter discussion of Discovery like the plague. It is.
Yeah, you should. You should. You should, for sure. It's Thunderdome.
It's rough out there.
Yeah. So, and then we get the Enterprise is in dry dock and it's being repaired, and
got the straight struts on the under the nacelles now.
And then Spike basically says, "Hey, we've located the seventh signal. It's in the Beta Quadrant.
It's like 34,000 light years away." It's like, "Oh yeah, we'll never see that in our lifetime." Thanks, Michael, for being a bitch.
And then we get the final scene of Enterprise leaving space dock and going to warp.
No cliffhanger. None.
No cliffhanger.
It feels like an ending to Star Trek VI.
It feels like a Phantom Limb, actually, because you don't know what happened to Discovery. You're like, well, I'm assuming they went to the future, but we don't know what straits they're in. The ship was heavily fucked up by the time they left into that time. So
what if they come in the middle of that war?
I was absolutely expecting like a... We cut to Discovery, and it's like, you know, all the recent regenerations of Doctor Who, where like the TARDIS is exploding and everything is going crazy. So, you know, like, we have to, you're like, Jesus Christ, fix the thingy.
Right.
And then cut end season. Everything's exploding. We don't know what's up. And no, I actually really liked that they didn't. It's like, yeah, it's just nice.
I'm assuming we're going to pick that up on season 3. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just miss the mid-season cliffhangers. Like, Star Trek, I mean, most seasons of Star Trek had a cliffhanger between the seasons. And Discovery didn't either season, really, so far.
I mean, the Enterprise showing up at the end of one
It's not so much a cliffhanger other than it's like something super to anticipate like next season. Teaser. It's like, it's a teaser. We're going to see the Enterprise next season. That's not really a cliffhanger. It's not like... Oh no! It was just like, ooh, squee! This is going to be a next season thing. That's exciting. This almost seems like a new Pike series they're setting up for.
It really feels like they should have. And for God's sakes, CBS, fucking listen to your fans. We love Anson Mount.
They are, or at least attempting to. Apparently, they are actively discussing it. I want to say I read like a little interview with Anson Mount, and he was like, there would have to be some discussions.
Yes, I read
there's
that too.
There's no details beyond that, but he's like, I'm not opposed.
Yeah. Philip, you're our guest. I would like to have your take on Sweet Sorrow Part 2, and also then just give a brief thoughts on the full season, season 2 afterward.
Yeah, all right. No, I had a lot of fun with this episode. Yeah, it involves time travel, so if I wanted to sit down and try to pick everything apart, I absolutely could. I don't have any interest in doing that, really, because A, time travel, B, I just had a... It's been a really, really fun ride. Like, you can see where, like, the seams were stitched together, both, like, in this episode and in the season as a whole, of... Like, from, like, the writers changing over, everyone getting fired, people getting hired on, not left-hand on what the right hand is doing. But I'm still very much of the opinion that, for all its flaws, seasons 1 and 2 of Discovery are the best first two seasons as a whole of Star Trek so far, outside of, like, TOS. Because TOS gets to cheat because, you know, they made it.
Their first two seasons are the only ones that are worth watching. Watch third season or you'll sadly disappointed.
Well, I mean, I would argue that the Enterprise's first two seasons were fairly good. I mean, because Enterprise was pretty consistent throughout, but then it just got super good in season 4.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Which is fair. Like, and I have not seen a ton of Enterprise or, like, late DS9 or Voyager. So, like, I don't have a huge... Like, but like, I watch a lot of the first few seasons of pretty much every series of Star Trek.
It's better than the first two seasons of TNG. It's better than the first two seasons of Voyager. It's better than the first two seasons of DS9. Because the first two seasons of DS9, even though DS9 is my favorite series, those first two seasons are some of the most painful Star Trek to watch.
Yeah, and it's like, Discovery doesn't have your, like, Measures of a Man or whatever. Like, it doesn't have those, like, holy fuckballs, this is so good episodes of, like, you know, early season TNG, but just, like, as a season as a whole, like, this is the best first two Star Treks had outside of the literally first two seasons ever.
Yeah, I would
absolutely
agree with that.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, they definitely have done a stellar job production wise. I think writing they have some issues, but I'll talk about that on my
side. I mean, this they always do, and hopefully I'm with Dave on this one. Hopefully a lot of the writing issues are the fact that both seasons the writer's room shook up a bunch, and then with a unified, like, team working together going forward, things will level out.
God, I hope it doesn't get shook up again in season 3. I hope everything is solid, for fuck's sake. Please.
I really hope it's not like the cursed Star Trek of just like every season something goes wrong. Though, it was a really, really fun episode. There's a ton of just cool little, fun little Easter eggs like throughout it. Like, you actually see Spock's green blood. Yep. Spock's swirly thing is back when he's on the bridge of the Enterprise. The weird little, like, spectrograph of his thing.
Oh, yeah, that was great. That was great.
Yeah. Like, it was just a really cool, like, set touch-up. Like, the sass of everyone through... Well, this season as a whole, and this episode in particular, has just been a lot of fun. There's just a lot of just really cool... Like, oh, yeah, the original series pads. They brought back the pads from TOS and touched them up and made them look really nice. Because you see Number One and Halsted. Halsted? I think it's what it is. The Admiral, like...
Oh, Cornwell.
God, where did they get Halsted? Well, regardless, TOS pads looked great, really cool. Just love the Klingon screaming, "Today is a good day to die in Klingon," was one of the greatest things I've seen in recent memory. You know, it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm seeing you have a ringing endorsement for season 2.
Yes, I was. Me and my whole viewing crew were really, really into season 2.
Gotcha.
Like, even on the rough episodes, like, if at bare minimum it was a really fun ride, and it had some really damn good moments.
Right. Dave, what about you?
As far as the episode goes, I mean, it was. I've seen a lot of people online saying they were disappointed by it, and I don't know how, because...
Butthurt weirdos, so, they can't admit Discovery is good.
I mean, it's just... So much of it was, like, spelled out. Like, this episode didn't surprise me.
You kind of knew where it was all going.
I mean, like, the only thing that kind of surprised me is they kind of, like, hurt Culber, but they didn't kill him. I mean, that would have been shocking if they would have just straight out killed him.
You mean Stamets?
Stamets, that's what I mean, Stamets. I thought if they would have killed just Stamets right out, that would have been, like, shocking. But they didn't really kill anyone. Them killing Cornwell didn't really bother me. I mean, it's just... And if they're leaving them all behind next season, it doesn't matter if they kill them or not. Their time's going to kill them.
Yeah, Cornwall has made some dubious choices in her career, too. So I wasn't super, like, disappointed.
I mean, she kind of got her, like, redemption arc. Like, you know, I screwed up royally throughout the first couple seasons. Like,
yeah,
now I'm going to do the good thing and the right thing. And
team up with the good guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, just, I mean, her character was just all over the place. She just, like, would pop up in different places. It was just like, why are you here? You're on Section 31 ship. You're tied up with Section 31. But then she was on Discovery. Then she's
betrayed. She's Admiral. She can do whatever she wants.
It was just... Her character was just all over the place. I mean, like, nothing was really surprising about this episode. I mean, I was kind of hoping that they would, like, they would resolve everything and they wouldn't be stuck in the future. I mean, I was kind of back and forth, because last week I was like, yeah, it would be great if they got stuck in the future, but if Spock's going with them, then they'd have to get back. So they did their out, like Aaron said, and since Aaron said that thing last week where they'll find a way to make Spock want not to go, well, then that made me think, well, then there'll just be, it'll be a future. And that's, they got so many opportunities, but they basically thrown up their hands and been like, doing a prequel's too hard. We have to move things to the future.
Yeah.
I mean, and the writing is also on the wall, because we know that, this is kind of where we get into the news section, because from what we've read, Michelle Yeoh's Section 31 series won't start shooting until after season 3 of Discovery is done. So at the very least, they're sending, I would assume they have to send her back to the past. If, like, what they said, Phillips said at the beginning, that the Section 31 series is supposed to go into why they become clandestine. Or no, maybe we talked about them before the show started.
Yeah.
But either way, earlier before the show, what we said earlier, that the Section 31 is supposed to feature that, how Section 31 became this public entity and how they switched from public to clandestine. So it'll be interesting to see, like, how that happens. So at the very least, she's going to have to come back, if not all of them. I mean, it'd be kind of nice if only she comes back, because that would be lots of opportunity for the future, just all the other seasons being in the future, which would be kind of fun. But I don't know how sustainable that is, because, I mean, just imagining future tech, like 600 years beyond TNG tech, is going to be, like, probably a headache for them to deal with, unless it's like a post-apocalyptic future where the Federation is gone and everything that we know is kind of gone. And so it's kind of like the Stone Age of space travel again.
Yeah.
I mean, that way they don't have to invent a ton of future tech, and the Spore Drive will still be the hottest technology. I don't know. I mean, there's tons of possibilities, which is super exciting with what they've set up. But yeah, the episode, I mean, was pretty much exactly how I expected it to turn out. A lot of battling. Not all the plot threads came together like I figured. Lots of plot holes here and there, like we've mentioned throughout the recap. And, you know, it was solid. The space battles were beautiful. But one of the things also I think we said before the show started was that it was like a clusterfuck and then stagnant at the same time, where, like, no one really moved. The ships, it was just like a shooting gallery of just inside ship shooting out and the outside ship shooting in.
That's pretty standard fare sci-fi. Like, even if you look at, like, Star Wars or anything, like, it's the really big ships sit there and all the small ones fly around shooting everything.
Yeah, it's supposed to be reminiscent of, like, you know, like, warships battling the side stripe, but we didn't even get side swipes. I mean, that would be kind of fun if we got some kind of movement.
I was thinking, too, that the ships should have... What was I going to say? I'm sorry. Thoughts just totally escaped me. I thought that the ships were too close in part one, when they first showed at the very end of the episode, Section 31 surrounding them. I was like, those ships are really fucking close. They should be backed up quite a bit. You know, like, I know they're doing it to fit it in the screen, but it looked really like they're right on top of each other. So it's just one of those things, like, I know they do it visually. I think Guy Davis, we were talking about that for Wrath of Khan, how close those ships are.
I know they
do it basically because it helps the audience, because technically phaser fire could go from, like, you know, miles and miles apart, you know, because it's the speed of light, you know, honestly. So
Yeah, and like actual, like if you actually look at like how like bodies in the galaxy move, like technically speaking, they shouldn't even really be able to like see each other visually.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I think that's a visual aid for people while you're watching. Make it more action packed. Because I think Space Battle will technically visually look very boring other than the explosions.
Yeah.
I mean, all the phasers blasts beating over the shields was pretty interesting. Like, it was visually beautiful, even though at times it did look like a little bit of CGI barf. There's just so much was happening.
Did you notice that any of the like large capital ships had the like consistent solid beams, and then with all the little fighters were doing like
that was a really cool little touch. Lots of like TOS sound effects and the long streams of blue phaser. It was beautiful. They did a really good job with it. Could have used a little bit more movement, but I mean, other than that, I mean, that's my really only, and other than that and the clusterfuckiness of it, it was a little bit over the top. But
we got ship movement later on. It's just in the very beginning they were kind of just sitting there. So like the Enterprise was really flying around there for a while.
And it's the first Star Trek to really acknowledge that like up for the ships is completely relative.
Yeah.
So like the Enterprise like flips over to block the Discovery and. It doesn't matter.
I know, Phil. Just go with that point. Somebody said, "Hey, the last episode where they showed the connecting corridors for the two ships. Yeah. They just showed the ships going bottom to bottom with one corridor going into the bottom to the other bottom. It's way easier. Why are we overthinking this? You know?
If their secondary hold a secondary hull, that would have been Who knows?
What did you think about the full season, Dave?
The full season overall, I would definitely agree with Philip that the whole season is better than most first and second seasons that we've gotten from TNG, DS9, Voyager. I would say Enterprise is probably better because for the first two seasons, but I like Enterprise. Some people hate Enterprise. I mean, it really depends on what your preference is. Discovery is up there for probably the top two or three first couple seasons. Most of my issues with the show, I've vented before in the past. I don't have an issue with the show itself. I wish it wasn't a prequel, and now it's going to be a sequel, so that's exciting. I also wish it wasn't like a single character, so with so much focus on it, but it's...
So one thing actually occurred to me, because you've brought that up a bunch of times. I'm not saying you're like wrong at all for that, but technically speaking, that was the thing we were aware of before Discovery aired. They did announce that they were following a like lower deck like ranked person, and they were going to be the primary. They were going to be the primary focal point of the show.
But they also said they wanted it to feel like Lower Decks, and they only did Lower Decks until episode, like, 5, and then she was on the bridge. So it wasn't Lower Decks anymore.
Yeah, whether or not they succeeded in the goal is absolutely up for debate. It's just, like, this is technically a thing we were aware of.
It is technically a thing we were aware of, but the thing, she did become part of the bridge crew, and Star Trek has always been a bridge crew show where it'll follow one person on the bridge crew, the other person on the bridge crew. But the way it was, those all articles are written, it was like, well, the captain's always been the main character. I'm like, well, no.
He's been the main focus most of the time. Or Janeway,
But they don't carry the show. I mean, each episode is about a different character, usually. Or it's about the ensemble. It's usually not about just the one character. You know what I mean? Like, the way it was written was like, the captain is the only focus of the show. I'm like, season 7 of TNG, Picard, like, basically disappears. It becomes the Worf show. I mean, like, you can't say that Picard's the main character in the last season until, like, the last episode. Because Picard, I mean, Patrick Stewart did a lot of directing in season 7.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, it's... I mean, the way they said that just was just blatantly false.
I really think a lot of these producers and writers, they're just not connected to the real Star Trek that we grew up with. I just think they don't. I think they watch it as homework, but they didn't watch it as people who analyzed it and thought about it like we do. Like they didn't watch an episode and then lay awake in their bed for hours thinking about what the plot meant
assuming that the captain was the main characters, even though it was an ensemble show. And they didn't
thinking back to Kirk, and that was a different era.
Yeah,
you know, it's 60s. Like going back to Bonanza and Gunsmoke. It was a different time when you just had the one character and then a supporting cast. That's all it was. And it's like people didn't get past. It's like, yes, Kirk was cool at the time, but it's like we moved past that for decades since then.
And I remember listening to a Trek Files a while ago, and there was one of the letters they looked at was the TNG like producers, developers going like, okay, it's really kind of insane that the captain keeps going on all these dangerous away missions. Like, let's get away with that. Let's pull the focus away, focus on other people. And obviously that played out in TNG because we got, you know, Picard almost never went on away missions. It was always like Worf and all them and random other people.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
I mean, they did warn us, but the thing is you can have someone be the main character of a show and then not get 80% of the screen time.
Yeah.
I cite any HBO show, not just Game of Thrones, any premium channel show. I mean, hell, I can't think of any show that's in my wheelhouse of geeky shows that I watch that focuses on one character as strongly as Star Trek Discovery does. I mean, even Arrow, The Flash.
Smallville, and you had Superman as the main – or Superboy for the main character.
I'm sure
the main
if I character. Sat down and, like, pondered it, I could probably come up with a bunch, but –
I'm not saying there aren't shows, but the shows that I watch, I mean, even, you know, there's Friends. I mean, I watch Friends now because my fiance, she loves Friends. I mean, there's not a single main character in that. I mean, you know, any Arrow, the Flash, all those characters have a fairly large cast of people that all have pretty important parts. You know, it just in Discovery, you get Tilly for a couple episodes, then she disappears. You get Stamets for a couple episodes, then he disappears. You get Tig for an episode, she disappears, and she like pops up like three times in the season, and she's a great character. I mean, it's just all this stuff. And like Non, she's kind of been there, but she's just kind of, you know, she didn't have any character really until this episode. I'm like, oh, where's this Non been? I like this Non. She's kind of sadistic.
We shot Arium out in Airlock, so we got that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you can have a main character and not have them dominate the show is basically my issue with how Discovery's been written so far. And if they would write it with sharing screen time a bit more with other characters and getting to know them, I probably wouldn't have an issue with her being the main character as much. And then some people like on Facebook or YouTube comments like you've got a problem with an African American female being the lead. I'm like, no, I have no problem.
Yeah, fuck those people.
I have no problem.
Sick of those fucking idiots. Honestly, just because you have a fucking dissenting view, that doesn't mean that you're like shooting sunshine up CBS's ass because you say, hey, you got some problems with your writing. You know, it's like we have never brought up race. We've never brought up sexuality. We've never brought up any of those things. That's bullshit. Those people are looking for nothing that's not there. I'm so sick of that shit.
Yeah, but I mean,
oh, it makes me angry.
Yeah, and it's stuff I get. I'm like, I never said that I don't like her because she's a female or because she's African American. I have no issue with this at all. I just wish they would share the story with other people. That's my issue.
Like on a bit more of like a positive note, like of springboarding off the same thing. Like I am hopeful that we will see more of that next season. Because even if you compare first season to second, like
it got better.
It did improve.
But
as far as acknowledging the other people,
they did acknowledge them more. But then they also started making Michael seem more like a superhero. Well, almost in this season.
My issue with Michael is I think in the first season, she was like your entryway as you're following her narrative. And you're talking the Klingon War. It was a big, big story. How do you tell it? It's something on a personal story and somebody who is somewhat important in the story. So that's why we follow her. I think we got lost when we went into the mirror universe because it was like we kind of lost the thread of the Klingon War, you know,
Mirror Universe.
I know. Are you in the series? I feel Philip about that. I'm just like,
absolutely.
I don't hate the Mirror Universe, but why did we stay so long there?
Philip joined us for Discovery. That's when he started listening to us. So
yeah,
so we picked it up a year ago.
Yeah, I think it was the first time Jen was on for Discovery season one was when I started listening. Because I've been following her Klingon shenanigans for a bit, and she's like, I'm going to be on this podcast. I'm like, I just started listening to podcasts. All right, let's go check this out. And I've been here ever since.
Ever since, and now you've been 2 episodes.
It, yeah. I preach the gospel to Synthaholics all the time.
Thank you. You're one of our door-to-door Mormon people. That's fantastic.
damn right. No, I absolutely am on the same page. Because, like, Mirror Universe, like, as a concept is fun. If you look at it for more than 5 damn seconds...
It doesn't make any sense.
It falls apart.
And we looked at it for almost 5 episodes.
Complete nonsense. And then they're like, we're going to be here for 5 damn episodes. It's like, which is also piggybacking on the twist that I hated so much.
Oh, Lorca?
Lorca.
Oh, I despise.
I hated that so much.
Because it took one of the most interesting characters I had seen in Star Trek ever.
Ever. Like,
oh, no, he's Mirror Universe. He's just a mustache-twirling baddie. Yeah. I'm like, no, I wanted them to actually have just, like, Starfleet-produced a giant douchebag.
Right,
like,
right.
Just ruthless asshole. Like, came from the Starfleet we know, like, that was cool. And they're like, I know he's actually from Mirror Universe, so he was born evil, apparently.
And I mean, like, he could have had a redemption arc. He could have become an admiral, and like that's how we see where the douchebag admirals come from, because like usually the captains are nice and decent people, and then all the admirals are assholes, so some of the captains have to be assholes, and Lorca could have just been like, one of those assholes who turns into an admiral.
They could have done so much with that character, and then by making him Mirror Universe bad guy, which I still don't think was well telegraphed, because like all the points people kept bringing up is like he can't see light right. All of them just so easily were explained by, like, if you just looked at it with Occam's razor, like Mirror Universe is the far more complicated.
Yeah, like it doesn't make a lot of logical sense.
They didn't start telegraphing he was truly from the Mirror Universe until they were in the Mirror Universe.
Right before they jumped to it. Right before
it was still dubious, but in the Mirror Universe, then they really started dropping him hard. I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah, because like, even like when he punched in the coordinates in the episode before they jumped to the Mirror Universe, like, you don't actually have a reason to suspect anything. Like, Stamets just went through hell doing 8 gajillion jumps. Like,
yeah.
it made more sense. Stamets have just being a little fried from jumping a bunch. Whoops, I ended up in this thing randomly somewhere.
Yeah. That he's been seeing anyway, because, I mean, it was teasing Mirror Universe stuff even earlier.
Yeah. And like, we already knew it was coming, so it's like it made more sense. It's just being an accident that they ended up there.
Yeah.
And then when you look at like Lorca's plan, like, how did he know Discovery existed? How did he know they were gonna have the spore drive? How did he know that they could use it? Like, it's like the Joker in The Dark Knight. Great character, but one thing goes wrong in his plan and everything falls apart.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
So many things had to go right for Lorca to get back. It just didn't make any sense. But
and over like a decade. Like,
yeah.
It's not even like over like month. It's like this took years to make happen.
Oh, like at least two.
Hated that twist.
It was awful. Aaron, how about you for season two and the season finale?
Like I said, the ship battle is really what I wanted to see. I knew this was coming, and we didn't see as much on season one, and I know we wanted to see more of that. I mean, Battle Binary Stars, we saw some of that. We saw some of that at the very end, but we didn't see a ton, you know, of ship-to-ship battles. And let's say, we at Synthaholics love our ship porn. And
give it to me, baby.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. I love it. I know Dave loves it, and I just love to see good starship battles. It's just one of the reasons we tune in, honestly. So I was psyched about that, and this finally we got it. I do think the ships were a little static for a while, and I think before we started recording, we mentioned about the small shuttlecrafts compared to the larger capital ships. So we have the lowercase ships, like we said, and the capital ships. I don't know if those drones and if the shuttlecrafts could actually pierce all their the big ships' shields. That's the thing is
well, one said she did get upgraded weapons for at least the ones on the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
But what does what does that mean? What does a shuttlecraft actually pose a threat to another ship? I mean,
I think it's kind of more of like a death by a thousand cuts kind of thing. Like, yes, a single shuttlecraft can't do shit to like a large scale ship. Yeah, but a shitload of them can.
But in Tsunkatse, they used the Delta Flyer basically single handedly to take out the transmitter DirecTV ship.
That's also the Delta Flyer, which is the. The Delta Flyer is to Voyager what the Defiant was to DS9. Like, oh, we've kind of shot ourselves in the foot with this concept. Let's give them a means to do other things. Go.
Let's give them a shuttlecraft that's just as powerful as the main ship. Great. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, right.
7 of 9 gave it some Borg implants, if you know what I'm saying.
So that's one of the things I was a little bit like, and then we did, like, I think Dave, you mentioned it. I don't know if it was before we recorded or started that, Suru ordered, like, you know, evasive maneuvers, Delta 5, and then the ship is going to sit.
Yeah, I think I said that before.
Later on, we do see Discovery, and definitely we see Enterprise really moving around, and that's cool.
Well, Discovery moves around so it could go to the wormhole.
And we didn't see a lot of the Section 31 ships, and we see them off in the distance, and we see them in the very beginning of the show, but we don't see them very clearly. So I kind of wish we saw them more in action too. So my ship porn was not the best quality, I guess. It was Japanese, where things are blurred out.
Too many tentacles.
Yes.
Not enough big titums.
So that was one of the things. I have some issues, like, you know, the building the suit that quickly. I'm assuming, Philip, that your theory is right, that somehow all this happened during that time period. But yeah. they're cramming for their exam at the last couple hours.
Yeah, that just comes from being like a big fan of like noir films. Like, that is a common trick in like detective films and things where it's like this is all shit happening at the same time. We just physically can't show you, so you have to kind of do that little leap.
So that was kind of frustrating for me. But the other thing was there's a couple things. So Tyler grabbing the Klingons and the Kelpians like within an hour. I could see maybe getting the Klingons, but the Kelpian seems like a stretch.
All he's going to do is like send a double dick pic to Laurel and she'll come, you know.
All right, I'm coming, baby. And then
bring your biggest ships, baby.
And then we see Sarek leave with Amanda and they didn't like alert Starfleet that this was happening and where they were. I just like, what? Why wouldn't they at least tell them? It seems weird, you know. I was like, you should have more Federation ships showing up. The
Federation signal was blocked still. They couldn't get a transmission back to Federation home base.
And the other issue is Discovery. You know, we saw the episode before they tried to blow up Discovery by lowering the shield or blowing up and the shields go up. But how come Discovery lets Burnham and Spock leave?
In the middle of a battle.
In the middle of a battle, and it's constantly taking shots. So, I mean, stuff like that just just frustrates me. Just little things like that. Lastly, the signals, it kind of becomes a grandfather paradox thing, doesn't it? Because, like, if Burnham sets up the signals, that means that it becomes a whole paradox that she sent off the signals to get them all to come see it.
And how'd she get them all to show up at the same time?
Yeah, like they actually briefly discuss that in the show. Like, they don't obviously refer to it as I think they did name drop the grandfather paradox.
I think it's the I Like Science
episode. In a prior episode. Yeah.
I Like Science episode.
Where I wanted to slip my wrist.
I like that line, but...
No, don't. We can't be friends.
But no, because like they discuss, it's like we've been in an open loop. This closes it.
Yeah.
And then by what, you know, once she does the jumps to send the signals, that's what shuts the loop and lets her jump forward.
And the suit, like I mentioned before, knowing that seems odd. Maybe there's more to the suit than we know, but
I guess that's time crystal shenanigans, probably. Yeah.
So this episode is a battle episode, and that's cool. I like that. I like a good get battle episode. I like just the action part of it. Every Star Trek needs a little bit of that. I mean, I know Star Trek is the thinking man thing. It's not necessarily Star Wars, but every once in a while.
But you know, now it is. We've got R2-D2s on the hulls of the ship.
That's right. But so I enjoy that part of it. I think my takeaway from this whole season two, I think it started off really strong. I think we got some character studies where it were somewhat interesting. Saru was probably the most interesting. The Tilly jaunt was intriguing. I think they could have done more with that, but I don't think we'll see more of that Tilly arc other than just seeing more of her later on.
Yeah.
Well, she did say she'd come back and see May, so maybe they'll have to go to the mycelial network and bring a bunch of spores into the future maybe fuck something up.
Maybe May is kind of going to be the surrogate in the future for the mycelium network, you know, that they interface. All that said, season two is much better, in my opinion, than season one. There's a lot good going on here, a lot of great character development. We need far more Jet Reno. I'm sorry, just write her in more.
That is an objective fact. That is not an opinion. We need more Jet Reno.
Yeah, Reno kicks ass. I just love her character. I think the plot kind of meanders a bit. I wish they kind of would have stayed on task more, and I wish the writers would think through their plot holes more often. I wish they would I don't know. There's some definite issues. It's like the thing that pisses me off about it is these people are getting paid for their work, and I know there's a writer's room, and there's probably a lot of pressure from producers to throw this in or do this, that, or whatever. But honestly, it's really kind of your fucking job to make it work. And this is why you're getting paid lots of money, not a little money, good money to write these shows.
I mean, arguably, depending, I mean, you know, anyone can have their opinion on what they think of the show itself. But, I'm pretty sure, once again, CBS All Access had record-breaking subscriptions for season two. So,
but do we know that, Philip? I mean, we don't ever get any metrics on that.
We did for season one, and it was the biggest push they'd ever had.
But it was their only push.
Well, yeah. I mean, technically, there are people that use it for other reasons. Like, I literally was just talking to friends of the family today that use it for watching sports and shit.
Oh, fuck those people.
But
not your family, but
boring ass crap. But regardless, it's to the studio and to the producers and the bigwigs, money is the only success. So,
the show doesn't exist without that success.
Yeah, and so to the studio, whether or not the writing is airtight is irrelevant. Did we get a bunch of subscriptions? Did we make a bunch of money? Is all they care about? I definitely do think, looking at the tweaks they made to season two to bring it a bit more in line with a lot of the diehard Trekkie outcry, is another really good sign. That's another thing that I think, once we have a stable writing room, a stable development process, we'll see a lot more of. I am not saying they have to listen to all the fans all the time anyway, because that can lead to dumpster fires.
You can't do that. That's impossible.
But I definitely think that they're clearly taking a lot of things more into consideration. And I think with more stability, it'll pay off a lot better, hopefully.
I'm just looked up an article here, Philip, and it says CBS. This is by CNBC, and says CBS reaches its 8 million streaming subscriber goals 2 years earlier. And this is published on February 14th, 2019.
So yeah.
So they have 8 million streaming subscribers. So that's nothing to sneeze at. And their goal in 2022 is to jump it to 16 million. And to 25 million after that. So it's, I wish them the best. I watched the very first Twilight Zone, and I was a little underwhelmed. I think it was a good concept, and I think the acting was great, but the story went on a little too long. It's basically an hour show, And yeah. They could have done it in a half hour. And the it's just like you kind of got the point within like 20 minutes of the show. You know, it's like, and then we pull it out for an extra 20 some minutes more until we get the conclusion. I don't know. I didn't see the next one. I probably will. I didn't make me want to watch the next one right away.
Yeah, definitely the Twilight Zone is the thing I definitely want to watch before my all access expires, because I only ever subscribe for Star Trek. I'm one of those people.
Yeah,
which
I am
is probably
too.
A lot of people. But I think with like Twilight Zone, I think one of its stumbling points might be like back when it came out, it was this really cool like counterculture thing. And like the kind of sci-fi that makes up the Twilight Zone has been much more in vogue in the decade since.
Well, I mean, we have Black Mirror, we have a bunch of shows like that now. So it's like, or even
like the rebirth of like Twilight Zone, Night Gallery, and all those in like the 80s and 90s.
Sure.
This is all stuff like that's another show where I think it's like they're gonna play it really close first season. And then subsequent seasons will get a lot more adventurous. Like, I don't know. I haven't watched any of it yet, so I don't actually have an opinion. But
I do hope to get more adventurous, because, I mean, the first episode I watched, it was all right. I mean, I thought I liked it better than Aaron did. But, I mean, it's definitely understated compared to Black Mirror and stuff like that. Where, like,
yeah.
Black Mirror is like, holy fuck! Just soul-crushingly, like, ow. Whereas this one was just like, it was like, okay, you know, his life started to fall apart a little bit, but I mean, he undid it, but it was just kind of like, okay, but yeah, it wasn't as like kicky in the balls as Black Mirror was. So I do think you might be right. They might be playing a little up closer to the chest this season. I really hope they go balls to the wall next season. Cause after Black Mirror, going to this is a little bit tame, and I'm like, oh, come on. Use that CBS All Access to show us some crazy shit.
Yeah, you can do anything with it. I mean, honestly, have fun with it. Jesus Christ.
That's one of those things where you see that a lot with a lot of, like, when you go back and watch, like, classic sci-fi or anything, where it's like, you have to kind of remember that at the time, the reason it seems so, like, cliched and like, done and, like, derivative is because it is the thing that was
imitated. This is the originator. Yeah.
Yeah. I ran into that with like Alita a lot. Mm-hmm. Like a reviewer I know is like, it was really derivative, but I'm like, this comic has been around since like 89. Like, it's derivative because all the things you're thinking of spawned from this.
Well, the same thing, Philip, is with like when people like I've met with like friends that are definitely comic book fans, and they see Jack Kirby because he's revered, and they're like, what the fuck, who gives a fuck about Jack Kirby, he draws like shit. I'm like, dude, you just don't get it. Comics before that his style was unseen before. He took comics into a whole new dynamic. You cannot look at it in the eyes of, you know, 2019-18. You have to look at it as 1960, whatever, 5 or 66, or when all this stuff started really coming out with the Fantastic Four and all the other stuff. It's like totally different. Nobody had seen that shit before. So it's like the same thing. You know, like so much has been drawn off of the original Twilight Zone episodes. Sure, there's a lot of shitty episodes in those. There's episodes you can totally skip in the Twilight Zone that you don't need to see. But there's probably a good 10 to 15 episodes that are must-sees for any sci-fi fans, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I hope CBS All Access is successful, and I'm assuming the Picard show is going to push this over the edge to what they need,
because people love them some Picard.
They do like Picard.
Yeah, I definitely think the Picard show is going to be the like I think Discovery is aiming at a much broader audience, like, whereas the Picard show is going to be specifically targeting like the diehard Trekkies.
Yeah,
I hope so.
I think so too. And you know, I think that's going to happen. You're going to pull in the TNG fans, anybody who was on the fence before. They're going to come on if they can have the disposable income for that, you know, five some dollars or more a month. They're going to come aboard to watch. You know,
yeah.
So all the people who have refused to watch Discovery, that love Picard will come for Picard, and then since they have it, they can watch Discovery, and then maybe they'll like that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
There's another contingency of the Star Trek fandom, or just old fans from the 60s or the 80s that have never, you know, they just can't accept anything new. And yeah. Those people too, you know.
Yeah, and like I know I've chimed in on the actual like Facebook page on this point, but like I definitely agree with, I think it's Guy Davis was pointing out that it's like this negativity is literally what happened to every Star Trek series after TOS.
Sure.
And then years later, like, oh, like, because now even Enterprise and like Voyager is getting like a lot more like appreciation for like what it did and what it tried to do.
Can I drill down on that just for a second there, Philip? Because it's like there's one of the things I have a problem with Discovery, and it's not just Discovery itself. I think it's even like, you know, we can just Game of Thrones because it's hugely successful. There are Star Trek episodes that I will go back and watch just because I know that's a fucking good episode. I will watch the shit out of that episode over and over again, and I will never get tired of it. Same thing with like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll do it for one of these episodes. I don't know, because it's telling a narrative story over time. Maybe there's one or two, but out of a season. But I don't know if I would go and watch just one episode. It's like, this is a fine episode, or this has a great moment, and I want to rewatch. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe with time, I'll change my mind. But it's just one of those things, like Game of Thrones. I don't think I would just pop on one episode just to watch it, unless there's some scene I really want to see.
I think with the story-driven things, like if you're going to watch it, it's like I'm going to have to like spend the next couple months just rewatching the entire thing. It's not something you can just watch in segments like old Star Trek.
You know, I'm definitely on the same page. Like, I'm definitely a big fan of Discovery, but like, I would be hard pressed to point to like outside of like Magic to Make the Saves Man Go Mad.
Yeah,
that one's just a shitload of fun. Yeah. Like, you'd be really hard pressed to be like, this episode, like this, it doesn't have any of your Measure of a Man's, your Darmox, your Tapestry, your like Inner Lights, like. But that's part of that. It's just because it's serialized storytelling. Like,
and Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad is the only one that could be standalone. That if Star Trek Discovery was a regular season of Star Trek between seasons 1 and 7, and they kept the same captain, that could have happened anywhere because it didn't matter.
Yeah, like that whole story, like other than it being Lorca, like would make just as much sense in like season 2.
Yeah,
like
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Showed up and is being crazy. What about what can you do? But yeah, so no, I absolutely agree with you, and I don't think years down the road, like people would be like, this is the great episode you have to watch. I just think Discovery as a whole will be much greater appreciated as just Star Trek in general.
I hope so. I hope that the season 3 we see the crew coalesce better. I think we're getting it in the beginning. We're getting in season 2. Yeah. But I'm hoping we see more better results and stuff like that. And hopefully maybe it's a smaller crew too, and maybe we'll get more cooler aliens or future people, or I'm sure we'll see Borg or something like that. That's the other thing. I was wondering if they were talking about they want to write the Borg in for Discovery. So maybe this is something they'll write in. Maybe we'll see a Borg dominated universe.
Theoretically, yeah. There could be a Borg-centered universe. Leland could grab a time crystal. Like maybe the nanites could form into somebody else. Because the nanites are still there. They just brought Leland into the future.
Yeah.
So maybe the nanites could take over somebody else.
They could just throw him into the sun.
Just eject him into the sun.
But since time travel is a big thing now, maybe he could jump 2,000 years into the past, which would be fine. That's an early enough timeline for the Borg to exist, 2,000 years in the past. So that's fine.
I'm definitely hoping they don't do the surprise control as the Borg, because that's not as bad as Mirror Lorca, but it's still kind of rubs me the wrong way.
I mean, it rubs me the wrong way too, and I was scared they were going to do that because of the nanites, and Control said something very similar to Resistance is Futile a couple times. They said
lots of neon green.
Yeah.
Which, granted, that's, you know, first contact of Voyager Borg, but it was still there. Yeah. No, I'm kind of hopeful that we'll get more of like that classic Star Trek.
Yes. Discovery
stories.
Well, how about just going out and exploring?
Yeah, because they're going to be 950 years in the future. We don't fucking know what's going on there. Right. So now it's going to be about poking around and figuring out what is. So I'm hopeful we will get like a much more of like a TNG feeling show.
I hope
and
so.
And that's what I liked about the beginning of this episode before we got in this whole control issue in, you know, AI, that this was like these red bursts and what do they mean and what we have to go discover and explore what this is all about. It felt like a science episode and or a science series. And then it turned into obviously a showdown between man and machine.
It turns into Terminator in space. Yeah.
Terminator. So anyways, that's cool. Should we just talk about quickly the news that we were hinting at before?
Yeah. Oh, actually, just one question for you before we get into the news. Do you think in next season we're going to jump back and forth between the future and the past time? Because they did not show the interrogator's face. Like, what's up with that? He sort of sounded like he was already taken over by control. Like, he sounded weird to me.
Well, actually, the news kind of talks about that. I mean, unless they're lying.
Okay.
So when they talked to Kurtzman about – this is a Hollywood reporter, and they talked to Kurtzman about Section 31 show. And they basically say that, yes, the Section 31 show is going to have Michelle Yeoh, and it's going to be more like Deep Space Nine that we saw with Sloan, and that there won't be any ships or badges. It's going to be completely clandestine. So it won't be seeing that. And then they talk about control and says, we see control's neutralized. And Kurtzman answers, all I can tell you is control is officially neutralized, but there will be much bigger problems when we get to the other side of that wormhole.
So, yeah. Yeah. So I'm hoping we get not necessarily like Monster of the Week, but a lot more of like a wacky shenanigans. Yes. Like, what's going on?
I mean, like it could go like one of two ways. It could go... the Federation is still existing. They just get back to Earth and like everything's futuristic and hunky dory. And they just like reassimilate in and they get a new ship and a new captain and they like, we're in the future so we can, you know, use the spore drive and they can like, you know, be shocked about how they were handled in the past, you know, like how they were expunged from the entire history of the world. And maybe then that's when they decide they can't go back or won't go back. And that could be, you know, all the remaining seasons could be in the future. That's one way it could go. The other way it could go is Federation doesn't exist anymore. Everything's fucked. It's like Mad Max in space, and they're just trying to survive in the far future with a thousand.
It's Riker when the crazy beard when the Borg is everywhere.
Exactly.
The Borg's everywhere.
Yeah.
You can't let's say was that yesterday's Enterprise? No, it wasn't.
No, that was the Worf episode where. He kept breaking the future.
Oh, yeah. That's was that Schism?
No, Schism is the one where Riker got his penis cut off. This was the Worf episode because it was season 7.
Yeah.
Because
when he's bouncing through the timelines, like
he won the birthday party.
Yeah, he won the Bat'leth tournament, and then he didn't, and then Alexander did, and then blah.
Right.
My son can't even lift the Bat'leth.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, it could be Mad Max in space. I'm thinking. Because it'll probably be hard to figure out future technology, I'm thinking it's going to be more Mad Max in space, which would be interesting, and that would give them a reason to have to fight to get back to their timeline.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they have to get back to the timeline, because the Michelle Yeoh series, I would assume, would take place in the past.
I'm assuming they're going to find a threat in the future that's going to try to – they got to stop somehow in the future, and what they'll do is they'll send Michelle Yeoh first – to stop it in the Section 31 show. And then I'm assuming Discovery will come back by season 4 if we have a season 4 of Discovery.
I mean, that's what I'm thinking, but I'm thinking it's got to be more Mad Max in space for them to need and want to come back to their time. Because if it's the perfect future where the Federation still exists, they really have no reason other than their connections to come back. But the thing is, if they're in that picturesque Federation still around future and everything's fine, and they look at the past and said they were expunged, they would kind of need to not go back. Because otherwise it would undo the heavy-handed wrap-up that they gave us at the end of season 2. Because they were very heavy-handed with like, oh, this is why it's not going to be explained. This is why no one talks about this stuff and da-da-da-da-da. It was very heavy-handed and it was very expected the way they were going to handle it.
Right.
So I'm thinking they'll either have to stay in the future I don't know. Right. It could go either way.
And again, also in the Hollywood Reporter, they ask Kurtzman about the fan petition for the spinoff of the Captain Pike show starring Anson Mount. And Kurtzman basically says that the fans have been heard. And he says, anything's possible in the world of Trek. I would love to bring the crew back more than anything. It's a huge risk for us. One of the most gratifying things is how deeply the fans have embraced Pike, Spock, number one, and the Enterprise. The idea of getting to tell more stories of them is a delight for all of us. So, I mean, it kind of just says, like, yeah, maybe. But to me, it sounds like Anson Mount said he'd want more creative meetings about that. Maybe that, but also he wants to talk about a salary.
Probably, yeah.
And honestly, you know, if he's going to hold up a show, yes. I mean, and I think that's one of the things that they were saying, it's a huge risk for us, is because they would have to take them on as, you know, people who want them. And was it Rebecca Romaine and Ethan Pike? I don't know if Ethan Pike commands a high dollar, but he would probably after this. So
maybe. Well, the thing is, like, as much as I want a Captain Pike show, I don't think it'll ever be a thing, because they just put Discovery in the future so they can avoid fucking up canon. Like, they've basically gotten bitched out by all the fans and probably us, that they're messing with canon too much, and then they're not doing a good job making things make sense because their writers can't, you know, do the research. And so they've jettisoned Discovery to the future, so they don't have to worry about that anymore.
So
making a Captain Pike show would make them have to they're basically putting themselves back in the same situation that they've just unfucked themselves with by moving Discovery to the future.
I think it'd be, or I'm sorry, Aaron, you had something you were going to say there.
I was going to say, I think maybe they've learned from this now. Maybe, like you said, Discovery, they had to write off into the future because of the Spore Drive and other factors. But for the Enterprise episode or Pike show or whatever you want to call it, I think they could do that because now they've done their homework. If they have maybe more institutional knowledge now than they had before. So
yeah. That's very much the point I was going to make, is like with a Pike show, they'd effectively have, like, there's a lot more established canon material to draw off of for what has Pike been up to pre-TOS, like, because it, you know, gets brought up in episodes, or, you know, it gets comes up in like the Menagerie or whatever. Like, it's way less, we have to make a bunch of new stuff, as much as we just get to expand upon established things.
I mean, maybe, because, I mean, I guess with the Enterprise, it's established canon, and they don't have anything to unfuck themselves with. But just anything that's a prequel, you still have to, like, do a lot more dancing around canon. Like, you can't show the Ferengi, you know, in the Captain Pike show unless you do something.
Well, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things they can't do if they stay in a prequel, which is why I think they won't do it. I would love for them to do it. I just don't think that they will, because they just unfucked themselves with Discovery.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm hoping they, whoever the writers and the people in charge of Star Trek are watching all the past episodes and going through it and consulting with and hearing podcasts and article and reading articles and blogs and everything, and knowing that, hey, you got to do your homework, basically.
Yeah, I would love for them to do it. I just think they're going to be too lazy to do it. That's kind of like what I'm getting to. I don't think they're going to want to put in the work to do it. I mean, I would love for them to.
I think it breaks down to the same thing as always: the almighty dollar. Is there enough of a fan demand, and will the production be cheap enough that the studio be like, "All right, we'll do this"?
Well, they built the Enterprise set. I mean, that's a big thing right there. It was probably a redress of the Discovery set, but they've got those pieces to swap out for the Enterprise stuff. So, yeah, I mean, that's a big part of the budget done right there.
Yeah, I think the spendy part of it would be cast.
Mountain and Romaine.
Yeah, Mount Romaine.
Peck, who knows, but those two are definitely high.
He's got a famous family, so maybe he's kind of spendy. I don't know.
He's connected for sure. I just, my thought more is like, how could you, I mean, Patrick Stewart's obviously going to command big dollar for this Picard show. But I'm assuming they know that they're going to pay that, and this is what they need to do to launch a better and stronger CBS All Access. So,
I mean, it's. I mean, like he said, anything is possible. But there's just so much in the pipeline. Like, you know, even Disney's pulling back on Star Wars a little bit because of oversaturation. We've got Discovery. We've got the Section 31 show. We've got the Captain Picard show or the Admiral Picard show, whatever it's going to be called. We've got Lower Decks. We've got the Nickelodeon children's series. So we're like at what, six series? Captain Pike would be seven. And there's also the rumored Star Trek Academy series, which would be eight. The rumored Khan miniseries, which would be nine. Nine Star Trek series going semi-simultaneously. That is a lot of shit.
Yeah, I don't think we'll actually see nine. I think a lot of those are just like putting out feelers. Okay, would people want to see this? Because like the Khan series really didn't get a lot of traction. They're like, we're thinking about it, and I haven't heard anything about it since.
Yeah, from the last thing I heard was an interview with Nicholas Meyers.
Yeah.
He wrote a spec script on it, and they said they looked at it, and he hasn't heard anything back on it.
So it might get held off, or it just might not happen.
But there's like five for sure. A Pike show would be six, and then there's other two or three nebulous ones. I mean, that is a lot. I mean, like, even the ones we know are for sure happening. Picard, Section 31, Lower Decks, the Nickelodeon children's Star Trek show. And then Discovery. This is like five or six shows that are happening. That is a lot of Star Trek. That is going to be a lot for us and other podcasters to cover if they want to do their own stuff too. That's not just the new series. If you want to talk about old stuff, that's a lot of stuff to cover. I mean, it's just going to be like all new stuff. I mean, it's going to get to a point probably in the next couple of years where we're only probably gonna be able to cover new stuff and never go back to anything old. It's going to be insane. It's going to be fun. It's going to be great having this new era of Star Trek. But I mean, is there room for Captain Pike? That's another question. I want it. I want it really bad. I love Anson Mount. I love Rebecca Romijn. Peck's growing on me. Like, the Enterprise set is beautiful. I love it. I would love to see more of that new Enterprise set all the time. But it's just being said, like, is it going to be oversaturation of Star Trek? That's what we're going to have to worry about. Just two Star Trek series going simultaneously for the 14 years, because, you know, the TNG to hand off to DS9, the DS9 hand off to Voyager, and the Voyager hand off to Enterprise. That was a lot of Star Trek. And that killed Star Trek, just having four series and only two of them ever overlapped at a time. We're going to have four or five overlapping. Without a Pike series, so like,
well, yeah, but could we, if we did a Pike series, could we get an introduction at the very end, maybe of a Commander Kirk or Lieutenant Commander Gary Mitchell, you know, coming aboard the Enterprise? I don't know. I mean, these are questions. You know, I don't know how that shook out narratively between who took command of the Enterprise, but we could see some characters coming aboard the Enterprise that we knew from before. And some people were saying that might be a backdoor for maybe a reboot of some of the TOS stuff as well. So
I mean, there's so much potential, but at the same time, I'm scared of oversaturation. Like, I mean, what is too much Star Trek? I mean, for us, I mean, we're super fans. I'm pretty sure the three of us will be thrilled for all the Star Trek we can get, and we will consume it gladly. But how much is too much for the casual fan?
I'm not super excited about Section 31. I've voiced this before. I don't know if I'd voice it on the podcast itself, but it just feels anathema to what Star Trek's supposed to be. And I know me and Dave kind of disagree on this point, but...
But Michelle Yeoh is so amazing. I mean, wouldn't you want to watch the show just to watch Michelle Yeoh? Cause
her character's kind of annoying me more and more. I like her as an actress. I like she has, you know, a great persona on screen. It's just that I get tired of like the snippy, like, oh, I'm gonna just, like, you know, step on you in my dominatrix boots kind of thing. I don't know.
It turns me on.
It wears thin on me sometimes. That's all. I mean, she has her shining moments. Don't get me wrong.
Well, I mean, I feel part of what you're saying, because, I mean, injecting Section 31 to the show so much felt like Daredevil Season 2, or it was really a Punisher Season 1, whereas Discovery Season 2 is sort of kind of a Section 31 season one,
right.
sort of.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of annoying.
That's it with like all the DC TV show. The Arrowverse stuff was.
Sure.
Yeah. Surprise, this is now a quiet launch for this other thing.
Yeah.
It's, right. it's very. I mean, the backdoor pilot thing was like. Really over heavy-handed this season, and it kind of until we knew the control was like going to be the bad guy, it just felt like jarring to Section 31 again. And it's like, oh, this is the big bad. Okay, it's just like it wasn't clear. Like if they would have like not dragged their feet so much in the first what 7 episodes, it would have made things feel a lot better. I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like we wouldn't have been as annoyed if Section 31. Showing up as often. It's just the way it's like, it wasn't a bad idea. It's just the execution kind of is faulty, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Section 31 show. I am like curious. Like, I think it'll be interesting. Like I've had a lot of fun with Michelle Yeoh. I'm also just a giant Michelle Yeoh fanboy and have been for years.
No, she's amazing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not.
So yeah, like it's kind of one of those things where it's like, I didn't know we needed that, but I'm not immediately like opposed to it. So we'll see where it goes.
Pike was my favorite thing about season two. Michelle Yeoh is my second favorite thing about season two. Like I love her character. She's a great actress. Her motivations have been very interesting. She's got an interesting character. And I do like the idea of a show based around her. I mean, I hope it's not just based on her. I hope it's not the Star Trek Discovery syndrome where it's so much on her. I hope there's a nice collaborative cast.
Well, we've got at least Ash Tyler, so.
Probably.
Which I'm sure you're all so excited for.
I hope they kill him really quick. He'll be the leader of Section 31. He'll be giving Michelle Yeoh orders until she figures out how to circumvent him. She'll just inject him with some nanoprobes. He's control again.
Get him.
Yes, that would be great.
I don't know. It's exciting time, and obviously, I think Discovery moving into the future. 950 years in the future seems a bit much, but it seems right for Discovery. Honestly, I don't think Discovery fits into the narrative of where we are with the rest of all the stories that we've known after this. You know. With the Spore Drive and everything else that's happened, so it makes sense that they had to leave somehow this reality.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting for sure. There's tons of potential for next season, so I'm so excited to see what they're going to do with it. The season was a roller coaster. Like, I loved the first couple seasons because it felt very classic Star Trek. Then it meandered a lot, and then. It ended on a medium to high note where it's like the potentials are virtually endless for what they could do next season, and that's exciting.
I'm speculating Borg.
Borg, yes, because it always comes back to the Borg.
I kind of hope not, because Voyager really kind of played out the Borg.
Oh, I agree, Philip. I think Borg has been played out quite a bit. I'm speculating. These writers are like, oh, I'd love to see the Borg. I'd like to write the Borg in. So that's what I'm saying.
You know who we need to have as the big antagonists for Discovery Season 3 in the far future?
Khan.
Gorn. I was going to say the Gorn, because we never get to see them actually do anything. And that would be awesome, because lizard people are cool.
Lizard people are cool.
I would love that so much. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I would love to see Gorn more. But I am scared they're going to do the Borg because of the control thing, because control could leave the Borg and they could show the origin of the Borg from the future going to the past. And everyone loves the Borg, so I can definitely see them doing that and control being that possible seed.
Yeah, I could see them doing it. I am not like as certain of it, because like right when they initially did like the control nanoprobe thing, I'm like, oh shit, this is gonna be the Borg, isn't it? And they, other than like a reference or two here, like they really didn't hammer on that much. And so I've kind of like, it's definitely still a thing they could do, but I don't think it's where they're going.
I mean, I honestly hope it's not where they're going, and I was scared it was where they're going, and the fact that they didn't completely go there has kind of got me going, maybe they won't, but the season has been like, oh, maybe they won't, and they did. So, I mean, who knows? And with a whole new writing staff, or if the writing, I'm not sure if there's been a writing staff change between season two and season three. I know there was one early in season two.
I'm sure there'll be a writing staff change, because that's just how writers' rooms work. But the main thing is, like, the hand guiding the ship isn't changing.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the part that needs to stay put.
Yeah, Kurtzman is the leader. So hopefully he'll do a good job of leading. And I mean, there's lots of neat stuff he can do. So I hope they do new things and not just, oh, look, it's the Borg again. Although, but the reality of if the Borg aren't stopped, they would be probably taking over the future. So,
yeah.
And let's do just a quick wrap up with one word or one thought. Who is the new captain of Discovery?
Tilly.
Saru.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Saru.
Oh, no. I want Nan to be the captain. I want more sex jokes from her as the captain. Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah, Nan would be fun, but, like, especially with how Saru kind of took over everything, like, the last few episodes.
He's pretty aggressive now.
Yeah. My money is, like, at this point, the crew is just so used to listening to him. Yeah. Like, they'll be like, de facto, well, you've been captain for, like, a while now. Well, everything was exploding, so hop to it.
Well, see, I mean, some people like Saru. It's probably not a good idea for Saru to become captain because captains only last one season on Discovery. So if he becomes captain, he might be next on the death chopping block.
Or they could just stop that and have a consistent captain going forward.
No.
I mean, isn't the
pathway... This is Star Trek Discovery. We discover a new captain every season.
Isn't a pattern.
But isn't the pathway is for Michael Burnham to be captain sooner or later? I mean, that's where I assume we're going.
Presumably, she'll become captain and then die.
I honestly don't really think so.
Really?
Yeah. So, like, if I look back at, like, season one and early season two, like, the big rivalry between Burnham and Saru was you're the one Giorgio really was into. Like, I got passed over. Like, there was that, like, sibling rivalry.
Right.
And
as
season one, like, especially after Lorca, you know, had the big reveal, and then anytime Pike wasn't around in season two, which was plenty, like, it's completely flipped. Like, Michael is clearly much, much more comfortable not having the weight of command, like, just being the science officer, and Saru is very ably taking up this position of power, especially after, was it Vahari? I think is what that was called.
Second puberty, as what we call on Synthaholics.
Yep. I mean, you're not wrong.
Right, right.
But, I mean, hypothetically, you could be wrong. It could be first puberty. We don't know how, you know, Kelpians work. But,
well, I mean, they have
for the time being, it'll do.
Since they never got to go through that process, I assume they had a first puberty because the race still exists.
Yeah. So I think just the narrative arc of Burnham. And, like, I think what we'll see is Captain Saru, Commander Burnham is probably the most likely.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so, too. I mean, but I think sooner or later they might make Michael the captain.
Yeah. So. If Michael gets captain, it's because, like, something happened to Saru.
And they write Saru off.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, you know. They make Saru captain season three. Saru dies, so Michael can become captain. And that would be like could be another heart wrenching scene, or like, you know, he's like dying in her arms. It's like, remember that time I asked you to kill me? That was funny, wasn't it? And I lived and became captain before you did. But now it's your turn to be captain, Michael. I'll die in your arms.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but like the point you just kind of brought up, like I was captain before you did, like, that was very clearly the rivalry early season one, and, like, clearly is not either of their, like, focuses in like later one and two.
It comes down to the philosophy: is anybody who's ever been wants to be a boss has never been a boss, because when you're a boss, it sucks. There's a lot of work and no appreciation for everything you do. So that's what it comes down to. So anybody who wants to be captain has never been captain. So should we wrap it up?
Yes, we're going into the 2-hour mark.
It's your rodeo.
That was Star Trek Discovery season 2 ending. And then it's such sweet sorrow.
Yes.
I just wonder, I wonder when season three will start. Will we have this, like staggered start where, like, the first season started, like, late 1 year and went into the beginning of next year, and then the season two started, like, basically when season one wrapped up the previous year? So are we a year away from Discovery season two, I mean season three from now?
Or well, even so, we'll get Picard show, so.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm hopeful. I'm kind of hoping that, like, the January or whenever it was that was the second half of Discovery season one and then the starting of Discovery season two. I'm hoping that this becomes kind of the norm.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, just the season one and season two has set a precedent for, like, the production starts so late for the next season that, yeah, like, every season starts, like, 4 months later than the previous season or something. Yep. Like that. I mean, who knows?
Yep. Time will tell.
Time will tell, son.
Well, I think they knew season three was going to be a thing earlier than season two. I mean, because they took a long time to announce season two was going to get renewed. But ever since Kurtzman became the head of Star Trek and been given a 5-year mission to, like, oversee Star Trek, I just assumed, took for granted that Discovery would run at least 5 seasons, at least until his contract is up.
Yeah.
So it seems more certain now, I guess. So hopefully that things will be on track for January start, which would be kind of nice.
Yep.
Well, yeah, I mean, it actually wouldn't be a January start because they probably want to let Picard run its mark. So if the Picard starts late December, it might be April before we see Discovery.
I mean, it's going to depend on how long of a season Picard.
Oh, I think they said 10 episodes.
Oh, did they?
I think so. So maybe March.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Who knows? I guess it depends on when December it starts, too. But it's exciting.
Or we could get a TNG DS9, DS9 Voyager, like, halfway through Picard starts up the other. Like, it wouldn't have, obviously, the plot connections, but that kind of overlap like we used to get.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to overlap. I think they want Star Trek to continuously be on, so I think they're going to try and stagger it so that it can just, like, never stop. So hopefully they'll get that done, and that'll be an exciting time. We'll be talking new Star Trek all the time, Aaron.
Yeah, woo. Sure.
That'll be an exciting, exciting time.
Maybe more people start listening to the show. Woo.
Maybe I'm trying. More new listeners. I'm trying, man.
I appreciate all your good hard work. And so last time, you weren't anonymous last time. So if you want anyone to find you, where can they find you?
I don't really have any online presence other than my own name or my general handle on pretty much everything is Samurai Mujuru, which is Mujuru. Otherwise, just I pop up randomly on the Synthaholics Facebook page to argue with people.
Phillip's one of our more vocal people. So
hit me up there.
Yeah. Join the conversation. I really appreciate Phillip's feedback. And that's
it's always a really fun time.
It's part of the reason we wanted to have him on during Discovery, because he started listening to us for season one, and he's one of our more vocal people on the Facebook group. So definitely wanted to get him heard, not just in text, but actually on audio, so you guys can hear his thoughts as well.
You're my dulcet tones.
Yes.
Dulcet tones.
Dulcet tones of Philip Melarick and Guy Davis. Because he's got dulcet tones as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the show, you can find the show online at Synthaholics.com. Our music is started by Warp 11, except the intro, that's by our friend Dave Wilkes. He also remains anonymous. The show...
He lives in a bunker.
He lives in a bunker in Buffalo somewhere, I think. But you can find the show online at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. Join the Facebook conversation so you can find Philip at Facebook.com/group/Synthaholics. You can take a look at listen to our podcast on YouTube if you want to listen to it on there while you're cooking dinner or whatever. Just go to YouTube.com/Synthaholics. You can also find some of my old drink tutorials there. And sometimes I put up other things occasionally. So go ahead and check that out. For Twitter, if you want to follow us on Twitter and tweet at us, you can tweet at me personally at David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird2004. Holly is at Lunar Thistle. And the show's at Synthaholic Duo.
And please go to Apple iTunes, rate and view us there. Leave us 5 stars, say nice things about us. And then if you can go to our Patreon.com/Synthaholics. And throw a buck a month, maybe more if you can do, just to help us keep the big wheels of the grinding gears of podcasts going towards future Star Trek episodes to cover. And then lastly, as Philip does so kindly to us, just let people know. Let people know about the show. It's a great way to support the show. Let your friends know. Let anybody know about us. It just helps. We said before, some people don't even know what a hell a podcast is, so...
Tell them the good news of podcasting and what they are, what they can do for you. They can lift your mood. They can make you laugh. They can make you grumpy. They can make you think you're sitting with a group of your best friends talking about the things you love.
Right. Exactly. Until they say something you disagree with.
And then they start yelling at the radio.
Right.
Or instead of yelling at the radio, you can just jump on our Facebook group and just tell us there. Tell us how
you disagree.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
Yeah, and we will respond. We try to be pretty good about that.
Yes, we definitely do.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Philip, for joining us. It's great having you on again.
Happy to be here.
Yep, thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We knew Holly would probably not be able to make it tonight, and it's always good to at least have a third. So we appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us this evening. And thank you, Aaron. It's always great talking with you as well.
Yes, sir. You too.
All right, well, thank you all out there for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
It's a podcast. We did it.
Yeah.
It's a podcast.
Yeah.
That they didn't exist. But this way, we often didn't see them because these were capital ships and they were really fucking powerful. So
lowercase ships.
Lowercase. That's what they're flying out the back of the ships. Lowercase.
The capital ships shard out the lowercase ships.
All right. Well, should we get started before we start? Saying too much because
I'm veering
wildly off on strange tangents.
Dave, before
that'll just happen anyway. This is Synthaholics.
Dave, what does I didn't see any real news really for anything.
Just Kurtzman has confirmed that the next series is taking place 950 years in the future. And
well, done. All you have to do is watch the end of the episode, and you know that's happened.
But he specifically said to you know, so they can not worry about canon anymore.
Yeah, basically. I like how he said, we like to play with the little nuances of canons, or
now we're part. Now we're just gonna say fuck it. We're not gonna have anything to do with canon. Some people are like, maybe this will tie into Picard show somehow. Picard will have been dead for 600
centuries,
600
close to a millennia.
I have more in common with Napoleon Bonaparte.
They did talk a little bit more about what the Section 31. Show's going to be kind of its MO.
Did they? Because, I mean, Georgia went with them, so how is that going to even work?
Well, yeah, I don't mean no, because Kurtzman or somebody involved in that show, or might have actually been Michelle Yeoh or the guy that plays Ash, in a lot of the same interviews that they mentioned, Discovery is for sure 950 years in the future in season 3. They mentioned that it's yes, we are aware there is this really big rift between Section 31 Discovery era and Section 31 DS9 era. And the goal of the show is to be this is how it got so clandestine, why they don't use ships anymore, and all those little fiddly bits.
I really hope they take advantage of the spore drive, because it's been my assertion ever since we learned about the spore drive that that's how Sloan got around.
And
because it's under penalty of treason, I mean, Section 31 doesn't have to worry about that because they operate outside the confines. So if they miniaturize spore technology, that would make perfect sense for DS9 level of Section 31. Yeah.
And especially since he specifically mentioned they don't use ships, that would be a really cool way to get around it.
Oh yeah, just a spore drive anywhere you want to go. That's
pocket spore drive or whatever.
Exactly.
So you're bamping out. Yeah, that'd be cool.
That would be really
make sense. It would connect really well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be pretty awesome. And someone was like, I saw someone on one of the other groups saying oh, maybe Discovery will get a captain from the 32nd century. I'm like, why would someone want to fly around in a 1,000-year-old ship? I mean, the only reason they would keep it is if the spore technology is still secret, or it died with Section 31 after it died, probably. Or even if, who knows if even the Federation's around. So at least Michelle Yeoh is coming back next season, which is why they said season 3 – is coming out before the Section 31 show. So Michelle Yeoh at least has to come out.
I had not seen that.
Yes.
I got the feeling that's season 2. Yeah, season 3 will be in the future and they'll find their way back by the end of it.
Yeah.
It's probably. just my feeling.
Yeah, we can talk about that more.
Yeah.
More in the details. It's like we'll have to have I guess we can save some of the news for speculation at the end. Because I mean, most of the news kind of deals with the show being over, so we should kind of talk about that afterward, I think.
Yeah, and like all the other big projects that aren't CBS have gone quiet, like the Tarantino thing's gone quiet.
Yeah.
And
Star Trek 4 has gone quiet.
Star Trek 4 is pretty much dead in the water.
You know, it's dead's quiet, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're not wrong.
right.
I guess sometimes the corpses can shriek when they're, like, letting go of some air, so it may not always be quiet.
Is it death rattle?
death rattle.
Sexy.
You know it.
Corpse great, fucker.
Great stuff for outtakes. This is great stuff.
Nothing quite as hot as a deflating corpse.
Yes. Quick, let me stick my dick in his mouth.
I'm not dead. Not quite dead. I did let you deep throat it before I decided to come back, so I don't know what that says. No.
Oh, God.
Oh, good God. That's great. That's in the outtakes, maybe.
Oh, Jesus.